Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out. My name is Melvin, and I want to thank you so much for being here. We are taping on Mother's Day 2020, still in the middle of the quarantine. I've got a whole bunch of stuff that I want to cover with you today, but I'm going to devote a chunk of time to a gentleman that you have probably never heard of, or maybe you have. I'm going to start with Charlemagne the God. So I don't always watch the Sunday morning shows, but this morning I decided to. I did my first Zoom DJ gig last night, a birthday party for somebody, which was tons of fun. I was nervous about it. I've never broadcast that way before, and I really need an audience. You know, it's part of the reason I do this show. It's part of the reason I do DJing, all the stuff that I can do that just gets me in front of people. And it was weird with all the people on the screen last night. So that's my audience, but it was fun. It's the first time I've DJed since the quarantine began, and I definitely look forward to doing it again. But with that, I worked pretty hard and pretty late last night. So I got up kind of late. It's mad hot in Portland, Oregon. We are in the 80s, just under the 90s right now. It doesn't normally get this hot this time of year around here, but I'm sure that at the very least some degree of this can be attributed to climate change. But with that, I didn't want to go anywhere. I just want to sit inside, which is, it's a quarantine. It's not like my options are aplenty anyway. But with that, I decided to take in some of the Sunday shows along with my cup of coffee. And after the Sunday shows were over, I did something I almost never do. I switched over to 24-hour news. I just wanted to hear some dialogue. And I was watching Alex Witt on MSNBC. And she had on Reverend Sharpton and Charlemagne the God. I know you've heard of Sharpton before. I'm pretty certain he's even run for president. But Charlemagne knocked me back on my heels with what he said. So Charlemagne is the same age I am and grew up in similar neighborhoods. But obviously, our experiences are quite a bit different. Charlemagne is black and I am white. But when I listen to Charlemagne talk, it really is like, I don't want to call it home, because I like to think of home is where the people that I love are now. I don't have a place that I was raised. I have a place where I was born, but even that, I wasn't there that long. But the place where I was raised, when I listened to Charlemagne talk, and I grew up in a largely African-American neighborhood, it's like being back there. But it's not the negative parts of being back there. It's the more positive parts. It's the conversations that I used to have with people in the when he talks, I feel like I could get in a room with him and talk, and we would have tons to talk about. Like, I feel like I know him. He's an entertainer. He's not generally a commentator, a political commentator, and I've heard him say any number of things that have to do with politics where it tells me that his knowledge is a little bit short, but I always feel like when he talks, it comes from a good place. So when I hear Charlemagne talk, I feel like I'm hearing the African-American community talk. And I also feel like because he is black and he is dealing with the black experience, he has authority on some of these things. Now, as he points out with some regularity, black people are not monolithic. And that's true. And you can see that in the fact that Donald Trump has a handful of black supporters, even though Donald Trump's doing everything in his power to devastate the African-American community, and Republicans have been for some time working to devastate the African-American community. So the conversation this morning was Joe Biden. Well, Joe Biden, yeah, trash-ass candidate, but it looks like he's going to be the guy. So what are we going to do? And they said, hey, Charlemagne, Reverend Al, is he reaching out to the black community enough? And they talk back and forth a little bit about that. And then Ahmaud Arbery comes up. Now, I'm sure that everybody's heard of Ahmaud Arbery by now. Say his name. Ahmaud was running in Georgia. Well, I'm a runner, and I know what this is like. He was running in Georgia when he was confronted by two armed white men who followed him around, tried to wrestle him to the ground. There's two of them against this one black guy. And then when the two, so it was like, I believe it was the father and Ahmad were tussling because they chased after him. They said that he looked like a burglary suspect. And then the son watched on as these two tussled. Eventually, when it looked like his father was losing, he shot Ahmad and killed him. Ahmad was out running, and they said, hey, it's Georgia. Black man running down the street. Pretty goddamn clear what's going on here. He's robbing houses. Like, that's the first thing that they went to. And so, old Jim Bob and his son, they got their guns, and they're going to go kill them. So, this is the reason why we have police. This is the reason why we have investigations. This is the reason why we have the whole innocent until proven guilty thing. But when somebody owns a gun, all too often they believe that it is their job. It is their job to enforce the law. But the problem with you and me enforcing the law with our guns versus the police enforcing the law with their guns is the police have the state behind them, and we do not. And there are certain protocols that police have to follow that we do not. So these two dumb rednecks murdered Ahmad Arbery. And when they were talking about it this morning, Charlemagne the God said, and I'm paraphrasing here, I'm not going to give you a direct quote. I heard it, and then I couldn't find the quote online because it's so fresh. It's not even been posted online yet. And I didn't want to wait. As soon as I heard him say this, I got hot. And I had to hit this microphone right away. I had a different show planned for today, but this just got my back up in a major way. Charlemagne said self-care for black people should include legally arming yourself. Why? So that you can protect yourself. And he's talking to the black community. Charlemagne's black. I am not black. Charlemagne gets to say things like this, and there's not going to be a lot of repercussion, although there should. So am I saying, because I think it's a bad thing. I think what he said is short-sighted. And I would like to pose some things to him. Charlemagne, I'm talking to you directly right now. Let's suss this out a little bit, okay? Unarmed black people are being murdered all the time right now. And sometimes in justification of those murders, police will say, well, pretty sure he had some marijuana on him, or pretty sure he had a gun. See, when white people murder black people, it's a far different thing than when it works the other way around. See, this father and son, when they murdered Ahmad, they got to walk around for 2 months before a video was finally released of them murdering this runner, before they were finally put in jail. And now that they're put in jail, there's any number of conservative outlets that are defending the murderers, finding any way they can to help the murderers. And things are being said like, well, they didn't know where or not he had a gun. He didn't have a gun. He was running. But the defense of the murderers has already started. And when Charlemagne suggested that African-American people should start arming themselves, it's going to get more black people killed. You can say, hey, this just means that they're going to have a fighting chance. No, it's not. Because, see, when a white person murders a black person, that's justified. And they almost certainly will walk away from that. If a black person murders a white person, that is the kind of thing that will set off all of the ignorant, gun-carrying crackers in this nation. If black people begin to fight back by carrying guns, the response will not be the same as what happens when one of these crackers decides to shoot up a school or a shopping mall or a church. they will be handled differently. Black folk are already handled differently now. What do you think is going to happen when black people have guns? They will become the problem. Let me remind you and everyone else. Governor Ronald Reagan, and you know, for conservatives, Ronald Reagan is their guy. Okay, he is their version of Jesus Christ, other than the fact that he died. But for them, for the conservative movement, he is Jesus Christ. The Reagan Legacy Project has seen thousands of things with his name on it. Reagan was a trash-ass president and a terrible human being and did irreparable damage to this country. And we still practice his short-sighted bonehead economics to this day, even though those economics have done absolutely nothing for the working class. Much like Trump, conservatives live and die for Ronald Reagan. But Ronald Reagan banned assault weapons. A lot of people forget about this. When Reagan was governor of California, oh, and just a sidebar, when Nixon was going through his whole thing, you know how crooked Nixon was, when he was going through the whole scandal, there was one person in the country who had no problem, and you can read this in The Invisible Bridge, who had no problem jumping in front of microphones and television cameras defending Richard Nixon, and that man was Ronald Reagan. If you read The Invisible Bridge by Rick Perlstein, it's amazing how much Ronald Reagan sounds like Trump and even defended Richard Nixon when it was pretty goddamn clear that Nixon did all of these crimes. But as governor of California, he decided to ban assault weapons. Why? Because a bunch of black folk decided to show up with guns to the state house and protest peacefully. Now, once again, white, black, okay? Think of all the dumb crackers showing up to state houses right now with those dildos slung over their shoulder. And they say that they're just out there peacefully protesting. And that's the way it's spun. That's the way it's defended. They're just out there peacefully protesting. Uh-huh. And guns, we can't do anything about guns because guns are considered sacrosanct. But I promise you that if those were black people out there, that whole Second Amendment thing, that would wash away in a heartbeat. Because it doesn't work the same for white people and black people. Go back to all of the unarmed African American folks. Once they're armed, these gun-toting crackers will finally have an excuse for killing whoever they want. All they'll have to do is cite what Charlemagne said. Charlemagne, whether he likes it or not, whether he realizes it or not, has a major influence in this area. And when I was looking at his Twitter feed, the same thing that he said on MSNBC this morning is the same thing that he said on his Twitter account several days ago. And the white supremacists in both his likes and in the comment section for his Twitter page were cheering him on. Why? Well, right now, it's a little tough sometimes for all these crackers to figure out how they can justify the murder of a black person. But with Charlemagne telling all those black people that they should arm themselves, these crackers who are really just looking for a reason to kill black people, they now have an excuse. They can say, hey, Charlemagne told them all to arm themselves. And when a white person kills somebody, it's called self-defense. If a black person shoots somebody, that's going to be called murder. I think it was Tupac that said, paraphrasing again because I can't give a direct quote here, but in the song Changes, he said, give them dope. Give them guns, sit back, and watch them kill each other. That's the way it's been for a long time. The economic prison that we have had black people in for a long time. They say, hey, slavery ended this many years ago or that many years ago or this. No. Because as soon as black people started getting a little bit of freedom, that's how we ended up with the Civil Rights March. Black people started getting a little bit more freedom. That's how we ended up with things like the Watts riots. You know, black people just getting, and white people cannot handle it. And this is not going to be any different. Do I believe that Charlemagne is trying to hurt the African-American community with his statement? No. I believe that what he is saying comes from a good place, and he feels like that it is the right thing. But this statement, unlike many of the other statements that I've heard him make over the years, I don't think that this one is thought through. Now, does this mean that I don't think black folks should defend themselves? No. Obviously, they have the right to. But what I would much rather see is I would rather see something happen in these communities where guns are celebrated and human beings are not. And this idea that, and I mean, I know I'm asking for a massive cultural change here, this idea that the only way that you have to protect yourself is if you murder somebody. That doesn't make sense to me. The objective for me is to see an end to the killing of unarmed black people. And I'm afraid that with what Charlemagne said this morning, it's only going to further complicate the situation. But as a white person, what opinion, even though I've sat here and expressed it, what opinion do I really get to express on this? And what part of my opinion might be taken seriously? Probably none of it. I'm not black. I don't have the black experience. I don't go through what they've gone through. I grew up in largely African-American communities, and so I feel like I understand the experience at least a little bit. But if I'm being honest, I don't, because I don't. I've never had to live as an African-American. Whenever I consider doing something, going into somewhere, going driving, going to a club, going to a retailer, I never, ever, ever, ever have to think about what race I am. So it's not for me. I don't get to tell people what to do. But with respect to what Charlemagne said, I would like to ask anybody to seriously consider the repercussions of what it means if you're going to obtain a firearm. And that's whether you're black or white. Just really, really consider the repercussions, because statistically, you're far, far more likely to hurt or kill someone in your household than you are an intruder. And as far as Ahmaud Arbery goes, Charlemagne, I don't care who you are. We're not running with guns. I don't know if you're a runner yourself, but for the rest of us, none of us are going to start running with guns. That just doesn't make any damn sense. I'm a runner, and if I have to run with a gun, I will simply stop running. I don't own a gun. Call it self-defense all you want. I don't think that's what happens. I think the gun culture in America is mostly white supremacy. All these chickens, all these cracker-ass chickens that are afraid that they're losing the demographic war, and so their response is they've decided to murder people that they're afraid of, which is almost always black people, and then maybe they'll get some of their demographics back. But I digress. And it would appear that COVID has finally made its way to the White House. And when I learned about COVID showing up in the White House, it brought to mind a time that I remember the president saying that we should let the virus just burn through the population. And of course, it's because he felt insulated. He felt like this is something that was never going to pierce his bubble. And I'm remembering a scene. I saw a brief moment the other day in the original Shrek movie where King Farquaad was, having one of these Roman style death matches. And I remember him saying very vividly, he said, "Some of you may die, but that is a sacrifice that I'm willing to make." And that's what I felt like it was for Trump. He goes, you know what? We can't shut everything down because he needs to have a good economy so that he can get reelected. He doesn't care about anything else. Remember, everything with this guy is transactional. And so when he said we should just let it burn through the population, let everybody get it, fine. If we lose 2% of the population or 3% of the population, would that be 7 million or 10 million? As long as he doesn't have to lose money and the economy doesn't have to stop slowing down. And the only thing that he forgot to add to it is that some of you may die, but that is a sacrifice that he is willing to make. Then he found out that his valet tested positive for COVID-19. Some of the people that have been standing at the microphone with him when he did his daily dum-dum briefings are now self-quarantined because they believe that they have come in contact with some of these people. Katie Miller, Stephen Miller's wife. Stephen Miller, the white power architect of a lot of the president's policies. Has tested positive for COVID-19. So have about a dozen other people in the White House. So immediately the thing that happens is we start to think about the fact that our president is in his upper 70s, pretty close to his 80s. If he serves a second term, he definitely will be in his 80s. And if he gets it, it could easily be a death sentence for him. But that's not what I want at all. Now, reports have said that as soon as he found out about this, he was, quote-unquote, lava-level mad about the fact that people around him had it, because that can mean that he gets it. So how would I like to see this play out? Here's the way I would like to see this play out. I want him to get the coronavirus, and I want it to ravage him. And I want him to feel, I've read the way people feel when they have this illness. I want it to ravage him. I want it to destroy him. All these stories I've read about people that have gotten over it, the way that they felt, I want him to feel all of that. So the next time he decides to shout out to all his white supremacist followers and tell them that they should march in front of state houses with their guns to liberate Michigan or liberate Pennsylvania or liberate Florida or whatever. The next time he decides to do that, he really, really has to think about it because he's been in their shoes with the COVID. I'd even like to see him on a respirator for a little bit. I just think he needs to understand that it's not a hoax. And the thing about this virus is it doesn't care who you are. It will destroy or kill anybody. And I think he needs to get it for a little bit. I don't want to see him die. Well, I'm not going to weep if he passes. Another dead Nazi? Fine. But that's not what I want to see. I'd rather he get it, see what it feels like, and then have a different perspective, because maybe that's what he needs to have a more adult response to what's going on. We are 5% of the population, 5% of the world's population, and yet we have 33% of the world's cases. No one else in the world is as high, it has as many cases as we are, and the amount of cases that we have is probably largely undercounted because of the fact that we don't have any sort of mass or universal testing. The other thing, and there was a report, I can't remember if it was Bloomberg or it was the Times, but they mentioned that a lot of people who need emergency room care are avoiding going to the emergency room. Why? Because they're afraid of going into a hospital and catching COVID. And so what's happening is those people are staying home and getting further sick or dying from things that might otherwise be preventable. And that's happening on a large scale. And we aren't counting those as COVID deaths, even though they are a result of COVID. The other thing, there was an article in the New York Times this morning about how paramedics are getting ill at a tremendous rate. The problem with our paramedics getting sick is the same problem with our doctors getting sick. Those are the people that take care of us. And if they get sick, there will be nobody to take care of us. So, in New Jersey, they've begun weighing a very tough call and have stopped doing, in a lot of cases, CPR. Now, even if I decide to become a teacher or work at a daycare center, the first thing beyond the background check that I'm going to be made to do is to take a CPR class. Why? Because CPR can save lives. But in order to give somebody CPR, you have to put your mouth on their mouth. And that is a fabulously fast way to get COVID-19. So they've made the choice in New Jersey, and I imagine you'll see this in other places where COVID is more widespread, that they are also going to stop or stop in some cases giving life-saving CPR to some people. Now, if the people that die because they don't get CPR so that we can preserve the life of the people that are on the front line, that's not going to count as a COVID death, even though it is a death that is the result of COVID. We're 5% of the world's population, and we have over 30% of the world's cases. But if we knew what the real numbers were, they would be far, far higher. I would estimate somewhere in the neighborhood, and speculation on my part, probably five times higher than what you're seeing now. Deaths are about 75,000. I think deaths are likely already at 250,000 if you take all of those outlying factors that have to do with this. And the last and final thing before I let you go today. There was an article over at Forbes talking about the next stimulus bill. So, you may or may not have heard this already. Here is what is being presented. So, some of you have probably heard that the Democrats want to make it $2,000 a month for every man and woman, for every working person who makes under $130,000. My speculation for this is, with the last one, there are a lot of folks that live in a lot of really super expensive areas who needed that relief but did not get it. You cannot get an apartment in D.C. or New York City for less than thousands of dollars per month. If you make $100,000 as an individual and you live in the San Francisco Bay Area, that's not considered a lot of money. Maybe you're middle class, maybe you're not, because it's insanely expensive to live out there. And I think that Pelosi, Representative Pelosi, got an earful from her constituents because they, along with some other major metropolitan cities that have large populations, were not necessarily included in that first bill because they made more than $75,000. So the threshold, the cutoff for this upcoming bill has been raised to $130,000 or $260,000 for a couple. So if you as a couple make under $250,000, you will get $2,000 per month per person. And that doesn't just include you, that includes your children. So in the last one, it was $1,200 per person and $500 per child for a one-time payment. What the Democrats are proposing right now is that you get $2,000 for you, your spouse, and each of your children. So this would mean, and I'll use myself as an example, this would mean $10,000 a month in the new stimulus bill that my family would get. It would be over $304 billion every month that is just being sent out to regular working people. And it would be retroactive to March. So if this bill passed in, say, July, which is probably what it, if it passed, that's when it would probably be June or July. Let's just say June, because that would be 3 months after the fact. It would be retroactive back to March, which is when this whole thing really, really got going. And so I would get, let's say it's June, I'd get all that back pay. I would get a $30,000 straight away, a $30,000 check from the feds. And I hear everybody going, whoa, absolutely not. That is not going to happen. But what we learned from the first stimulus bill is it wasn't enough. It wasn't quite big enough. There needs to be some kind of continuing payment. And it needs to be far larger than last time. And this time they're calling it Rooseveltian. And you say, hey, something like this will never pass, but consider a few things. Oh, and the other thing is you would continue to receive that money until the pandemic was declared over, which it looks like we're still a year out. So my family would receive probably by the time this was all over a $120,000 kickback. I'm calling it a kickback because obviously we pay taxes. A $120,000 kickback by the time this was all over, just helicopter money, free money. You say, Melvin, this isn't going to happen because the Republicans care about the deficit. Let me pause for a minute so that every one of us can have a good collective laugh. No, they don't. The only time they care about the deficit is when there is a Democrat in power. And we have a Republican Senate and we have a Republican president. So they don't care about the debt. The other thing, our numbers right now are larger than the unemployment numbers were during the Great Depression. And here's the other thing. Those numbers show no sign of slowing. As a matter of fact, they're growing more and more all the time. You go, but Melvin, what about all the places that are starting to open up already? The places that are opening up, I really think that they thought that they were just going to bounce right back. People were going to go out. They're going to buy stuff in India and all the rest. And instead, what's happening is a lot of people are sitting at home and doing the wait and see thing. Oh, y'all want to go out in public? I'm going to wait and see what happens. And then if our numbers don't start going up, then I'll join you. So something large needs to happen. And this is what the Democrats are pushing. So I know a lot of you, whether implicitly or explicitly, are cheering for this thing to happen. Even Republicans who claim that they care about the deficit, I know you do not. And don't lie to me and tell me that you are. I know that every single one of you would be cashing these checks and you would be very, very, very happy to do so. The other thing that makes this more likely to happen, this is an election year. And these are the highest unemployment numbers that we have seen ever. So what's likely to happen? A back and forth with the White House. Oh, and Trump has said he'll sign this, by the way, if they also cut taxes. Yeah, because there's nothing that a tax cut can't fix. So what will happen is there will be a back and forth in the House and the Senate. But they need that quickly because people needed this money yesterday and those unemployment numbers aren't slowing down. There'll be a back and forth and maybe it won't be $2,000 per person. Maybe it won't be retroactive back to March. Maybe it won't be $2,000 per child. Maybe some of those numbers will come down. But there has to be an economic stimulus because, and the president will learn this, his reelection depends upon it. Now, I know for some folks that's going to make us, well, maybe we don't need that money because we don't want him reelected. Here's the thing. We've never been in a worse economic situation ever in this country. And the future is wide open. We don't know what's going to happen. But this, for me, even if in a different iteration than it is now, this seems to me like an almost certain thing. So watch this space. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. This includes you, Charlemagne. I'd love to hear from you. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with you, our listeners. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I have woken you up, good morning.